Catherine Holm is an award-winning writer who lives with her husband in Cook, Minnesota, on 10 acres of boreal forest. Her short stories have been published in several anthologies and chapbooks. She has a new collection of short stories out, published by Duluth independent literary publisher Holy Cow Press. It's called My Heart is a Mountain: Tales of Magic and the Land. It's gotten some great reviews, including Pulitzer Prize-winning author Robert Olin Butler, who said Catherine Holm writes with great and winning assurance and with nuanced compassion. Catherine Holm is joining us now on Real Good Words. Catherine, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
So the land, it seems like all different kinds of land are so important to all these stories within My Heart is a Mountain. It's almost as if it's kind of a religion of sorts to it seems like to me. And one of the stories, that's a memoir called Dad's Rural Genes, is about your own connection to the land. So I wonder if we can start a conversation talking about that one and your connection to where you live and cook.
Sure. That'd be a good place to start. I think that my connection to the land probably didn't become apparent to me until we moved to the country. We moved up to the Iron Range area in Cook about 15 years ago. We moved from the city, and I had always loved camping, loved wilderness camping, did many Boundary Waters trips, loved being in the woods. But living here year-round and living close to the land and starting to write as well, because that's when I started to write, gave me I think a whole new perspective on thinking about land and place and how place shapes people.
And I find it so interesting this piece that you've written about your dad and his rural genes. You know, when you find something in life that kind of was always there, I mean, for you to remember his canning, the way that he kind of hoped that he would live at some point and how that connected to your own life. Can you tell us more about that piece, the Dad's Rural Genes?
Absolutely. That was, like you're saying, probably a little bit of hindsight there. If you read the story, you'll see that when my dad was doing this stuff in St. Paul, growing a little garden, getting into canning, a lot of that was brought on because my parents divorced, and so he had to learn to cook, and he had never done the cooking in the family, and he started to enjoy it, and he started to enjoy growing things. And I wasn't really that interested in any of it at the time, and I talk about that in the story. However, when I got married in 1994, my husband had come from a family that lived in rural New Hampshire, and they grew and canned a lot of food, and Chris had a lot of sisters, so he there was a lot of female energy in the household, and Chris hung around the kitchen a lot, and he likes to cook. And we both like to garden, so he kind of bought me into it. Even in the cities, we started starting some plants inside, and we had a little garden, and it was easier to grow things down there than it is up here. There is a longer growing season in the cities, so we made use of our tiny little yard and grew a lot of stuff. But yeah, that's a good story to start with. And I do wish that my dad were alive. I think he'd be real pleased that we're living in the country and trying to live close to the land.
And it seems like there's more to it that, you know, people who live up here sort of understand that. I think you write about that, you know, you don't need a new car every 3 years, or you're willing to give that up
Right.
so that you can do other things.
Yes. Those little subtle things, I think, are the really neat thing about living up here. I always find myself more so self-conscious about what I'm driving when I go to the cities with my old dented up. And it is a dented car. It's been hit a couple of times by deer. And I don't worry about it too much around here, and that's kind of nice. Yeah, there are things that I've come to really like about being here and leaving the city.
So why, it's always interesting to hear when people start writing. What do you think it was for you personally about coming up north that got you going on this creative path?
That's a good question. Well, we moved up here because my husband took a job in the area. And I had been working in government, actually. I worked for the DNR as a planner. And that really didn't fit me. I was finding that I didn't do too well in a big bureaucracy. And I knew that I wanted to do something different. And I knew that it was going to be music or writing. So when we moved up here, I just went into business for myself because I thought that I would have more fun than if I tried to get a job somewhere else around here. And that's how the writing started. I was teaching music, piano and voice, but I also started to write for a living. I actually started freelancing first. So I got a big writer's market out of the library and learned about submitting articles and started to sell articles to publications. And pretty soon I was doing other kinds of freelancing. And then the creative writing, which I had dabbled in a little in high school, kind of came in, and I think I was really inspired by the landscape, the quiet, which I seemed to need, the time that I had, and just having to express the huge adjustment. And I think that my first stories were about that, not in this book, but other things that I've written. The huge adjustment of moving from the cities for me up here. So I needed to write about it, and I just kept writing, and pretty soon I was writing short stories, and then I branched into some other stuff too. I wrote a couple of fantasy novels and more short stories and went on from there. So yeah, I've pretty much been writing since, creatively, since 1995, 96.
You have the word magic in the subtitle of this book, Tales of Magic and the Land. I think people maybe wouldn't always put those two things together, even though they make perfect sense together when you read your short stories. So can you kind of explain what you mean by this idea of magic?
I think what I mean is that, and it expresses itself differently in different stories, but that I like to believe that even in the most ordinary circumstances of life, that there's something right beneath the surface. I've always been that kind of person, something great. Maybe this is what some people call religion or spirituality, another layer. And so I do that in some of my stories. I try to take, and sometimes it happens unconsciously, sometimes deliberately on my part, but I try to look at a common situation and introduce something magic or slightly not normal. To showcase, the common situation, if that makes any sense.
It does. Well, also one of the common connections of these stories is that some of them are exploring grief, which is something everyone goes through in some form or another in our lives. The title story is My Heart is a Mountain, and it's about both grief and the land. And I wonder if you can introduce us to the characters that you created in that story.
Sure. I have a woman who's probably in her 30s or 40s. She's coming home to Appalachia. She's been living in the city, and she's coming home to rural Appalachia because her mother is dying. And her mother is dying in a cabin, very rustic cabin that they were raised in, this woman and her mother and a younger sister, the main characters, who died quite young. And when the woman, the main character, comes back, she's astonished at how the land is tugging at her heart again. She had forgotten as she got far away in the city. And she's also astonished at and saddened by the development that she's seeing. there are roads, new roads, and condos going up and things like that in, you know, formerly fairly wild places. So the phrase, "My heart is a mountain," is actually something that she says at one point in the story. I don't remember the exact quote, but something like, "My heart is a I feel as if my heart is a mountain and these roads are being carved through my heart." So that comes up for me a lot when I write, and I don't always do it deliberately, but it's almost as if people are, some characters are becoming the land themselves, or they feel it so strongly that they take it on. If you've ever had an experience, this happened once, it was really the strangest thing. When we traveled to New Mexico, we were in Ruidoso, my husband had to go for a meeting. It was very dry. I mean, there was extreme fire danger, and you just feel it. You feel it in your body. It's nothing like I'd ever felt before. So something like that, where you come, maybe you come a little bit closer to identifying with the earth or the place that you live or the place that shaped you. Now I kind of got off track.
That's Catherine Holm. We're talking about her new book that's out. It's called My Heart is a Mountain, Tales of Magic in the Land. It's a book of short stories and some memoir in it as well. I was so intrigued by this idea in this story in My Heart is a Mountain and other stories in your book, but about kind of that in-between time of life and death where people, you know, in this story where the mother who is dying is seeing the daughter who had passed away long before. What intrigues you as a writer about sort of that time in someone's life?
That time can be a very special time. And I think a lot of philosophies actually talk about something like in between or the in between time. I know that in yoga, which I've studied and teach, the space right between the inhale and the exhale is just as important as the breathing. But I think the time when a person is passing over, I've had a little experience with. I was present at my father's death over a period of several days. And yes, I think, I don't know that this happens for everybody. I can't say that for sure. But for me anyway, there were some things that happened that were very special, and it was like reality changed a little. There were some gifts that we were given. Hospice people will talk about this, and they told us about it. You know, things will happen, good things, like the person maybe sitting up when they've been prone for days, or seeming to see someone in the room or calling out, or even the energy or the light of the room changing. We actually had that happen when my father died in his hospital room, and I wasn't the only one that noticed. My brother picked up on it too. So I do think that, I don't know that it can be explained, but I do think that time, those times of transition, whether it's from life to death or maybe other kinds of transition, you know, they need to be noticed. Mm-hmm. And, could be, you know, inspiration for writing or other kinds of art. I'm sure I'm not the only artist out there that's pondered the in-between times.
You mentioned teaching yoga. That was something I wanted to ask you about. How your life in yoga connects to your life in stories.
I've been writing a lot longer than I've been teaching yoga. I started teaching in 2007, but I always, whether I knew it or not, for a long time have used yoga techniques to get more into a frame of mind where I can just ignore the chatter, what some people call processor mind, little editor going off in your head, whatever, and get more to the subconscious and get out of my way, basically. So I'll often use yoga breath, certain kinds of, you know, diaphragmatic, deep, relaxing breathing, and I'll even move. So sometimes I'll do some different poses before I write. And I try to remember to breathe while I'm writing. I was absolutely appalled. I took a workshop recently to learn to give workshops for writers and artists using yoga techniques. And I was absolutely amazed to learn that, and I'm sure many of us do this, when I was writing, sitting, and you're sitting still, I would stop breathing. That was just amazing to me as a yoga teacher, that I would freeze up and not breathe when I was writing. So I do think that there's more and more research is showing that the mind resides more than in just the head. And if you can use your body or harness your breath, you can change your brain waves and get the chatter out of the head, at least for a little while, that tends to inundate us every day and maybe, you know, produce a new kind of art or something on a deeper, more subconscious level.
Mm-hmm. Well, I saw that you do workshops, yoga as muse. Tell us more about that work that you do.
Yes. I've just started to do that. It's really fun. I run workshops for writers and artists that use the tools of yoga to help a writer or artist sustain and maintain their creative practice. And I think this is a really great thing for a couple of reasons. One, being a writer and an artist is very solitary, and you know, any support or tools that you can give yourself to keep going is terrific. It's, you know, the arts are also hard. You have to have a lot of tenacity and keep at it and not let rejection get you down. We've all had tons of rejections if we do this. The other reason that yoga as muse is really great, I think especially for writers, is like I was just saying, when you're writing, you're sitting still and you're not accessing that body knowledge. You're sitting still, which can be hard on the body anyway, hard on the back, hard on the wrists if you're typing, and maybe a little bit deadening. I mean, it's good to get up and move. It's good to breathe a certain way and try to learn to turn off the chatter and get to a deeper place. And yoga is really all about that. So pairing this, I just think is very exciting. I had no idea I was going to be doing this, but I took a yoga as muse workshop last year in New Mexico, and I was so excited by the process that I decided I wanted to learn how to give the workshops. So I took the training to do that last year, too. That's what yoga as muse is about.
I found that information is available on Catherine's website. If you're around the Cook area, it's catherineholm.com. So in terms of writing and your writing process, are there rituals, places where you write, where you're kind of triggering your body that this is your time to be creative?
There's a few things that I've started to do. I try, this doesn't always happen, but I try to write first thing in the morning. That works well for me. Might not work so well for everybody, but Robert Olin Butler, one of my writing instructors who blurbed the book with the quote you read, that was his suggestion. He thought that a lot of people have an easier time getting to their more fluid, what he called your dream state, your more intuitive mind, your more fluid mind in the morning. So you get up, what he does is he gets up in the morning, he might make a cup of tea, he tries, you know, you don't check your email, you don't let the world intrude, and you start writing. I've also incorporated a few other rituals now with my, that I'm doing yoga as muse in my life. I'll do a little yoga before I write. I usually start with some breathing and set an intention for what I want to get done in my mind. I might do a few moves, but I try not to get trapped by the ritual. If I'm moving and I'm all of a sudden, you know, I'm called to write, well, I'm going to write. And then I keep I try to remember to keep reading, and often I'll light a candle, too. I usually write at home, but if I'm on the road, you know, I'll take my laptop and write. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really enjoyed reading your stories, and I realize how infrequently I read short stories. Why don't we find short stories more often?
That's a good question. I don't know. I've had that same comment from friends and acquaintances who have bought the book.
Yeah.
You would think short stories would be perfect in this day and age
of
busyness. And it's they're different animals, though. You know, to me, a short story is, as a writer, I feel like short story has more power when I write them. On the other hand, a novel that I read, I don't know that I've pulled this off with my novels yet. Someone else would have to tell me. But a novel, you know, it's just, you can really get into it and escape, and mm-hmm. there's some length there if it's a good novel that you're enjoying, and that's really neat, too. So they are different for sure.
I'd love to talk about one more of the stories in here, and it's the final story, Farm Woman. And it seems to me that, mm-hmm. you know, this story could only be written by someone who has spent some time at a woodpile.
Yes. Uh-huh. That's right.
So tell us about this main character in this story.
Yeah, I don't know where she came from. Huh. As I was telling someone else the other day, I think there was an image that the story came from. And when I go to Virginia, I like to go to the co-op, and I'll often walk around Bailey Lake near Natural Harvest Food Cooperative. And so I'll walk around the lake a few times, and there's a, I think it might be an assisted living building, I'm not sure. There's an apartment building with some porches. And there's another building, too, with porches. But there's always been this one building, and I just stare at it, and usually there's no one on the porches. And often I'm walking, and it's very cold. So that image stayed with me. But yes, that character, I don't know where she came from. She was just one of those people that, you know, came through strongly, and she's got a mind of her own, and she loved the land. And I think I also was very interested in how awful it would be to be taken from your land as you got older, which is what happens in this story. The main character is, you know, convinced to move into town into assisted living because she's older, and her niece is worried that this older woman can't do the work on the homestead anymore. But, you know, this woman, the older woman, she very clearly loves her life on the land and chopping wood and canning and being outside in the elements. And yes, we have a wood pile, and I've spent a lot of time at it.
Right.
So has my husband.
Well, I guess I was taken by that because we have a wood pile too, and we spend a lot of time thinking about, you know, how much wood we have in the house and all of that kind of thing. And I think before, when we the first few years that we did that, I didn't really get it. It kind of just seemed like a headache in the middle of life. Like, we got to figure out how to heat the house. And just gradually over time, there's more to it. You know, I don't mind it anymore. I don't know if I would say I look forward to it, but I like the activity of it, of the work of it, and then what it means that we're doing this for ourselves. And it just seemed like that wood pile in this story for that farm woman just made perfect sense to me. That even though her niece is seeing her at it and thinking she's wobbling or she's not, you know, able to do this anymore, it's more than just the wood, you know, it's got more meaning.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. It does. And I know that when I've stacked wood, and my husband taught me how to stack wood. I mean, I didn't know a thing about it. He's been chopping and stacking wood since he was about 10. But when I stack wood, usually I go into a really neat zone. It's kind of like where you want to get when you're writing. It's almost like a meditation. I'll just sit there, and when you're in the zone and you're stacking wood, it's like you don't have to think too hard. It's like putting up a puzzle, looking for the pieces that fit so the pile won't fall over. And yeah, it's kind of a neat thing and a nice way to be outside usually.
Yeah, I still have not mastered the stacking of the wood. I leave that up to my husband because he's better at puzzles than I am too. So that makes sense.
But... Oh, well, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
Well, Catherine, you've got some events that are coming up Monday, next Monday at the Lyric Center First Stage in Virginia at 6:30. It's a reading and a book signing there.
Right, yeah, that'll be on the first Monday of the month. It's February 7th. Mm-hmm. They do it once a month. I think it's called Words and Lyric. And yes, I'll be reading. It starts at 6:30. I'll be reading, and books will be available for purchase, and I'll be signing. It should be nice. It's a nice little spot to do that. I've been there for these events before. And then the book signing date has been changed to Wednesday, February 9th. And that is in Hibbing at Howard Street Booksellers from 2 to 3:30 p.m.
And Catherine's new book, it's called My Heart is a Mountain, Tales of Magic and the Land. You can find more information at her website, CatherineHolm.com, and if it's not available in local bookstores, you can find it online through your website, I'm assuming.
Yes, and you can buy it in bookstores, online bookstores, at my website, or order directly through holycowpress.org, the publisher.
All right. Sounds great. Catherine, it was great talking with you. I have a great time at your upcoming events.
Thank you so much, Heidi. I appreciate it.